All right. Wednesday, 5 p.m., hump day. Thanks for tuning in and joining us. 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. So glad to have you aboard. I'm happy to say that I, as always, of course, have my lovely wife and co-host, Tati Morales Ryan, here as well, who may join in at times during our conversation. And the show is American Hit Radio. Are you there, Heidi? Behind the board.
Now.
There you go. Of course, we've been playing albums for quite a while. 500 albums that we call the Alternative Top 40. Another 500 that we call the Top 500 of the Top 40. Basically trying to cover the entire picture of what's been happening in music. And I don't think that if you rely exclusively on popular music, you're going to miss an awful lot. In fact, when we started the series, we were talking really about doing exclusively the non-popular stuff, the stuff that didn't make the top 40, because I thought it would be a little bit more interesting. Then after a while, though, it hit me that to really tell the full story, you really can't eliminate hit records. So we figured 50-50 is a good ratio, and that's a good way to pick it. So we have 500 that somehow were on the charts, either between number one and number 40 at one point in time or another at all, and another 500 that never got as high as number 40. And we are now pretty close to being halfway through our numbers. We're more than past the halfway point on the top 500 of the top 40, which makes sense with the older stuff, because there were, up until like, say, 1977 or so, when the punk era started and almost nothing made the top 40 that was valid. But before then, the albums that were being released were mostly meant for public, you know, consumption. And that's what got radio play. These are the songs that we got to hear. You know, all the Beatles, Rolling Stones, Kinks, Who, Bob Dylan. You know, these are the people that basically stayed on the top 40 regardless of what they did, to be honest. And so that is one very, very strong reason why we have more top 40 albums up until this point. Like I said, we are past the halfway point with top 40. Today, though, is an alternative top 40 album, and we're only at number 208 in our chronological list. So we're about 50 albums behind at this point in time. We will catch up. I promise that. But we're up to September of 1975, which is to say that this is another 50th anniversary album next month for Brian Eno. And his third album, entitled Another Green World. It didn't chart at all, so it is certainly well-suited for the alternative top 40. Now, the last time we played an album by Brian Eno was, I guess, maybe a couple of years back. We played Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy. And when we were covering that show, we talked a little bit about the Oblique Strategies card that he had made. Oblique Strategies was a very interesting thing that he did just for his own sake at first. Him and a multimedia artist named Peter Schmidt worked on them. And the idea was to have cards that would help to stimulate, you know, to do things that are creative. Since he never really considered himself to be a musician, quote unquote, but more of an artist, he had different ways of trying to provoke his own thought. So he would like draw a card and it would say things like, use an old idea, you know, work at a different speed, try faking it, things like that. And so the card told him to do it, and that's exactly how he would proceed. And he would end up coming almost inevitably with excellent albums. So this being his third album, this is around the point where he actually published the cards. They were released as something that you can buy. You can look up Oblique Strategies and buy a set of Brian Eno's cards if you're interested. So his homemade deck of Oblique Strategies playing cards that Eno utilized to record his previous album proved to be both fun and effective. It was a step toward theorization that started to intrigue him. So for his next solo project, meaning Another Green World, the album we're about to play, he decided to raise the ante a little bit. Before starting work on Another Green World, Eno had already, at this point in time, paired with Robert Fripp on a solo project that they, well, duo project, I guess, called No Pussyfooting, where Eno experimented with tape loops of Fripp's guitar work, creating this hypnotic, redundant drone. And he called the result of that Frippertronics. Now, these multiple creative processes in Eno's head served as like a hatchery ideas for Eno, and he set out to incorporate them on this album. So rather than entering the studio with the presumed notion of recording a batch of pop songs that he had already written, like you would expect some, like, say, as we said a few weeks back with Bruce Springsteen and all the work that he had done on being prepared for the studio, Eno decided to let the project unfold with little regard to any preconceived end product. So to do this, he invited a few friends to assist him, including people like John Cale, Phil Collins, and, of course, Robert Fripp. And with Eno manning the synthesizer, musical ideas flowed in a variety of directions. Some tracks became fully developed pop songs, with a typical Eno twist, no doubt, while others remained spacious, maybe even barren. These atmospherous tracks became the basis for his future experimentation with discrete music, music for airports, things like that. He didn't even had an album that he called Discrete Music, which would ultimately develop into what Eno eventually would dub as his ambient series. This is a push in that direction. So there's a lot of tracks, some of them relatively short, some longer than others, but the first one is about an ordinary length, and it's I guess that's also more or less like the most commercial song, believe it or not, when you hear it on the album. It's about 3.5 minutes long. This is called Sky Saw. We'll be right back. imagine that when most people listen to that track, they automatically assigned the guitar work on that to Robert Fripp, because he just had been working with Robert Fripp on No Pussyfooting, and he is on this album. So you hear that sort of like a treated guitar, and you're like, well, that's Fripp. That's what Fripp does. No, that's actually Brian Eno playing all those guitar parts. He would find out ways to basically like do all sorts of crazy digital things to like manipulate the sound of the guitar. And then he'd give it a name. Like, he called that snake guitar because he said it sounded sort of like something like wiggling its way through the woods, or, you know, on the dirt, sliding all over the place. Like, I guess what a snake would do. The only other string instrument that isn't Eno is by John Cale at that end, where the viola comes in and plays a counterpoint to it. So, and the drummer, by the way, is Phil Collins on that song. So, yeah, you know, he's surrounded by very, and he and Phil Collins got along great, from what Phil Collins said. You know, he loved it when he was in the studio, because he felt like he was very, very manipulative. He was willing to do anything that Eno asked him to do. And he loved that fun nature of Eno's way of approaching how he was going to record songs, because everything was loose. Create what you want. And if something weird happens, or it's instead of throwing it out, usually you maybe get rid of the parts that you were doing that were overthought, and you say, no, stick to that weird thing. Let's do that instead. And before the song is done, it's completely different than what you were beginning to think it was going to be. So even the musicians end up being surprised. I know one thing, the credits for the critics, I should mean, certainly were. The critics loved these albums by, you know, he was like, at this point in time, I think critics considered him to be one of the more ingenious and inventive musicians of the mid-70s era, because he was willing to go places where nobody would dare go before, you know. He was sort of this Star Trek character, you know. He was Captain Kirk going off into some bizarre space place. So that was Sky Saw. The next track up is a short piece. And, of course, if you live on Long Island, the title's going to, you know, make you think, oh, my God, he's talking about us. It's called Over Fire Island. I'm fairly positive that it isn't about our fire island. But to tell you the truth, I don't know. So it struck me that way in my head, because that's the only fire island that I'm familiar with. So I can't shake that off. It is what it is, though. Now, in this instance, it's still Phil Collins on drums. And it's still Brian Eno playing all the synthesizers and the guitars, everything. No vocals. So there's really, everything is drums, bass, and Brian Eno. Here's Over Fire Island. As I said, a short song. Now, the next one is got the same name as a movie that would eventually come out in the 80s. It's called St. Elmo's Fire. It is Robert Fripp playing the guitar on this track. I think actually the only people on this track are Fripp and Eno. So Fripp is playing the guitar and Eno is doing everything else. They always give weird names to, like I said, if something comes up and there's a certain sound, they gave it a title. So in this instance, Fripp is credited as playing the Wimshurst guitar. And that's named after a strange machine from like the late 1800s, about an electrostatic generator machine. Its job was to basically create sparks. That sort of a thing, as I understand it. I have no idea why or what purpose it really served, but Eno apparently did. And he said, and he thought that the guitar playing somehow reminded him of that. So here is St. Elmo's Fire with Robert Fripp playing the Wimshurst guitar.
And I were tired. We had walked and we had scrambled through the moors and through the briars, through the endless blue meanders. In the blue August moon, in the cool August moon, over the nights and through the fires, we went surging down the wires, through the towns and on the highways, through the storms in all their thundering. In the blue August moon, in the cool August moon. Then we rested in a desert where the bones were white as tinsel, and we saw St. Elmo's fire splitting irons in the ether.
I think that the reason that critics love this album so much is that there is an identifiable song form, but it's incredibly unique and different. I mean, Eno's way of approaching, like, say, words is really unlike anybody else. He's not the type of guy that sits down. He's not a traditionalist. He doesn't sit down and try to write a story. In fact, a lot of the times what he would do is he would hum the melody or make mouth sounds. And then eventually, through the mouth sounds that he heard himself making, he would end up turning those syllabics into words and just let that become what they are. So if you're looking for meaning, you got to go pretty deep. But critics love to do that sort of thing. So they were like, I mean, for what it's worth, Rolling Stone, the NME, you know, the New Musical Express, Pitchfork, some of the most, you know, respected music magazines of the 20th century have all named this album, Another Green World, as one of the greatest albums of the 70s, or maybe of all time. It's well, well lauded. So if you don't know it, it's really mostly because the radio didn't play it, because it wasn't, quote unquote, commercial, but it certainly was artistically successful. Now, the next two tracks feature Eno exclusively. This is, if you want to understand how Eno works, maybe these two songs are the best expression of that, because you're going to hear him basically playing drum machines, synthesizers, electronic percussion sounds, and all sort of synthetic things that to put together his ideas. The first track is entitled In Dark Trees, and we'll segue straight into The Big Ship.
Thank you.
it's kind of awesome, isn't it? Isn't it intriguing? I mean, it's so different from like a standard pop song.
Oh, I love this album. This album's one of my favorites.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. I don't remember us talking about it much or discussing it, but I know we play it from time to time, and it's always a pleasure. I think it's because it takes you to like a different place than what a normal pop album does. A lot of pop albums just like sound like they just drop. But something like this, you feel like you're somehow a part of it in a way. I mean, what makes Another Green World unique, to, in my mind, is the manner in which it straddles all the different directions that Eno is headed in. You know, he's doing, like, there are about five songs on this album that I would say categorize as pop songs. Like, we played Sky Saw, St. Elmo's Fire. They had, you know, verse, chorus, lyrics, of course, you know, and a musical hook. But the last two songs we played, though, like, song form and lyrics are abandoned. Utilizing like it's just gives you this space to suggest a moody sense of intrigue, maybe peace, a sense of peace. The entire album has a gauzy texture to it, which I think lends it the oral equivalent of like seeing a landscape through a fogged over window. That's the feeling that I had when I listened to it. Now, you think of, like, at this point in time, the production techniques of the mid-70s demanded a crisp 1-2 punch. I mean, think about a Doobie Brothers album like Ted Templeman and how everything would be like so spot-on perfect, or Steely Dan, for that matter, who would, you know, produce everything to absolute minuscule perfection. What Eno does is I think that he uses this murkiness to his advantage. The lack of sound quality suggests like something like the nature of cloud patterns, maybe, where sounds shifting and floating as if in a dream. I wrote this down and it sounds weird to me now. I wrote, like a TV weather person utilizes color-coded maps to convey weather patterns, Eno does the same thing with sound to convey a sense of space, either open or claustrophobic. And then I aptly titled Another Green World. This is the album that opened entirely new horizons for Brian Eno and those who would eventually follow him, of which there are many, many, many people who did, especially those who hired him to be a producer of their album. Should mention, you are listening to 90.3 WHBC, WHBC HD. The show is American Hit Radio. And of course, we are playing the album Another Green World by Brian Eno in its entirety. And the next track up is one of those pop songs that I was talking about, in a sense anyway. It's called I'll Come Running.
I'll come running to tie your shoe. 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 Thank you.
There's another track that features Robert Fripp on guitar. I think he's very easy to recognize with his tone, the way that sound that pretty much never seems to fade out. It just constantly is there at the same volume. It's kind of an amazing thing that he can do. And the castanets that you hear on that song, it's not castanets. It's actually a guitar with mallets. They're hitting the neck of the guitar with mallets, running it through some sort of an electronic sort of a synthesizer thing. And when they were doing that, it came out sounding like a castanet. So they call it a castanet guitar, as far as how that happened. Now, I usually am concerned about side one, side two, that sort of thing as albums come together, because after all, these, when they were released, they were vinyl albums. In this instance, I'm going to like run roughshod right over that, because I'm going to play a couple of songs together. The next track, which is the title track, is a short song, and it's the last song on side one. But we'll segue that into the first song on side two, which is called Somber Reptiles. Thank you. You know what? I actually could have gone for the third song as well because it's also short. The next track is called Golden Hours. I'm sorry, Little Fishes. That would have been Little Fishes. Like, we just heard the title track, Another Green World, and that last song entitled Somber Reptiles. But the short number that I could have segued, really all three of them together, would be Little Fishes. So let's just play that now, which is another sort of like a sound piece. And we'll segue that into the track Golden Hours, which is another one of the vocal tracks, you know, sort of a the other side of what this album is like, of two kinds. So here is one of each back to back.
Thank you.
several times. I've seen the evening slide away while watching the signs taking over from the fading day. I've seen the evening slide away, watching the signs taking over from the fading day.
Another classic.
Yeah. I mean, again, and also the way that the songs bounce off of each other, they're so different. The same with the next two, Heidi. Be Calmed is probably, by the title, it's the most mellow song on the album. It's Brian Eno by himself. And then after that is a track called Zawinul Lava, I guess named after the weather report, Joe Zawinul, because I don't know any other meaning for that name. But we'll play those two back to back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're coming up to the end. I hope that you really enjoyed this. I hope that hearing this album, Another Green World, has left you feeling maybe a bit refreshed or in a good frame of mind. That's what Eno does best. That's why he's an excellent producer. So we'll play two more tracks, and we'll let you be. Thank you so much for joining us. First, you'll hear is a song entitled Everything Merges with the Night, and then Spirits Drifting. Thanks, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Rosalie, I've been waiting all evening, possibly years, I don't know. Counting the passing hours, everything merges with the I stand on the beach, giving out descriptions, different for everyone I see. Since I just can't remember, longer than last September. Santiago, under the volcano, floats like a cushion on the sea. Yet I can never sleep here, everything ponders in the thank you.